God, an Anatomy, written and read by Francesca Stavrakopoulou. I wish you wouldn't keep appearing and vanishing so suddenly. You make one quite giddy. All right, said the cat, and this time it vanished quite slowly, beginning with the end of the tail and ending with the grin, which remained some time after the rest of it had gone. Well, I've often seen a cat without a grin, thought Alice. But a grin without a cat? It's the most curious thing I ever saw in all my life. Alice's Adventures in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll, 1865. Prologue. Think back. Where were you when you first encountered a Bible? I was 5, maybe 6 years old, sitting cross-legged on a scratchy beige carpet, a big picture book open in my lap. The book was a children's illustrated Bible, and its pages smelled delicious, tangy like poster paints, if faintly musty, like the public library. I can vividly recall what I saw. Abraham had tied up his son Isaac on what looked to me like an unlit bonfire. He had a knife. He was about to stab him and burn him. But he was suddenly stopped by an angel in the sky with yellow hair and a billowing robe, pointing at a fat, fluffy sheep. There were more pictures in the book. An old man on a mountain carrying 2 big slabs of stone. Another old man in a chariot pulled by horses made of fire. I kept turning the pages. There was a man covered in seaweed, sitting in the belly of a big blue whale. The baby Jesus in a bed of hay with sheep, cows and a donkey crowding round to look at him. A woman twirling scarves as she danced in front of a head on a plate. I briefly stopped and stared at the picture of the man nailed onto a big wooden cross. He was covered in scratches, blood trickling down the side of his face. I've never believed in God, but religion has always intrigued me. As I grew up, it was everywhere, pushing its way into view and punctuating the passing of time, from daily school assemblies and Sunday night TV to the giddy excitement of Christmas nativity plays and chocolate Easter eggs. But it was during family trips to museums that religion became tangible. Giant stone statues of gods, rounded, fleshy and powerful. Gods draped in tunics and wearing sandals. Gods with toenails, elbows, eyebrows. In other rooms, there were brightly painted coffins with bodies wrapped in strips of dirty fabric, surrounded by gods with the faces of animals, a cat, a dog, a bird, a crocodile. Turn a corner and there were more gods, this time carved on tiny polished stones, sitting on thrones in long skirts with horns on their crowns and monsters at their feet. In museums, I learned that the deities of Egypt, Mesopotamia, Greece and Rome were the gods of the wider world in which the Bible was made. But where were the statues of the God of the Bible himself, the only deity among them to survive into the modern day? While I was studying theology and religion at university, there was a broad assumption among lecturers and students alike that the God of the Bible is without a body. This was a formless, imageless, invisible deity who in the Hebrew Bible, or the Old Testament, revealed himself in words mysteriously uttered through his prophets, and then in the New Testament became flesh, incarnate, in Jesus Christ, in order to die for the sins of humanity before resurrecting and ascending back to the heavens. But as I looked closely at the books comprising the Bible, I couldn't find this bodiless God. Instead, these ancient texts conjured a startlingly corporeal image of God as a human-shaped deity, who walked and talked and wept and laughed, a God who ate and slept and felt and breathed, and a God who was distinctly male. As my undergraduate studies progressed, no one seemed to talk about the body of the biblical God until one memorable lecture when the gender politics of modern Christian theology were being discussed. I was excited to discover that feminist theologians had long taken issue with the maleness of God in their scriptures. And yet, it soon transpired that the way in which both feminist and traditionalist theologians proposed getting around this sticky issue was to insist that God couldn't possibly have a sex or a gender because God didn't have a body. I vividly recall protesting in the question and answer session at the end of the lecture, But lots of biblical texts suggest that God is masculine with a male body. The problem isn't God, replied the professor, a highly respected Christian theologian and a man of the cloth. The problem only arises when we take the Bible's descriptions too literally. He went on to explain that those troublesome biblical portrayals of a corporeal, masculine God were simply metaphorical or poetic. We shouldn't get too distracted by references to his body, he said. To do so, he claimed, was to engage too simplistically with the biblical texts. Apparently, we had to look not just at the texts, but through the texts to engage their theological truths. Everyone else in the room seemed remarkably content with this approach to the God of the Bible, but I found it deeply frustrating. Why should I look past the clear image of God as a gigantic man with a heavy tread, weapons in his hands, and breath as hot as sulphur? A God who took on a monstrous sea dragon in a physical fight and won? A God who walked about in his heavenly garden and in the cemeteries of his people? A God who stripped a woman naked and offered her up to be gang-raped and mutilated? A God who sat on a throne in a temple, enjoying the aroma of scorched animal fat as he waited for his dinner? A God who not only had children, but who willingly and willfully offered up his beloved son to be killed as a sacrifice? How could I not be distracted? Here was a deity just like those I'd visited in museums as a child. A God of ancient myths, fantastic stories, and long-lost rituals. A God from the distant past, from a society utterly unlike our own. Those were the terms on which I wanted to encounter him, not as a distant and abstract being, but as the product of a particular culture, at a particular time, made in the image of the people who lived then. A God shaped by their own physical circumstances, their own view of the world, and their own imaginations. Sitting in that lecture hall, it seemed to me that this potent figure had somehow been theorized away and replaced by the abstract being with whom we're more familiar today. A God celebrated in our cultural rituals, invoked by politicians and celebrities, and praised every Sunday on the TV. A God to whom many of my peers and lecturers expected me to be answerable, whether in this life or the next. A God whose supposed decrees have shaped our own social and cultural conventions about gender, sex and morality, about power and class, about life and death. And then it suddenly dawned on me. Everyone else in the room, my theology professor included, was censoring the Bible, sanitizing its deity of any mythological, earthy, or unsettling characteristics. I was disappointed by them, and disappointed for them. This is the book I'd have liked to read when I was at university. It tells the story of the real God of the Bible, in all his corporeal, uncensored, scandalous forms. Stripping away the theological veneer of centuries of Jewish and Christian piety, this book disentangles the biblical God from his scriptural and doctrinal fetters to reveal a deity wholly unlike the God worshipped by Jews and Christians today. The God revealed in this book is the deity as his ancient worshippers saw him, a supersized, muscle-bound, good-looking God, with suprahuman powers, earthly passions, and a penchant for the fantastic and the monstrous.